Now you're on.
Good morning, Kareen. let me start with some reminders. So in this story, G plus G minus is a finite dimensional Manin triple. And there's a couple of points I want to remind you of. So last week we saw a version of the sort of a weak PBW theorem in which we found an isomorphism between the universal enveloping algebra UG and these M plus M minus modules. So where these modules, so this is a version of weak PBW, and the modules can be thought of as respectively UG minus acting on a generator 1 plus and UG, tensor UG plus acting on a generator 1 minus, where the 1 plus and 1 minus are generators for the trivial modules of UG plus in this case, or minus in this case. So meaning that elements of G plus acting on this would be 0, which is why all that you have left acting on 1 plus is the G minus universal enveloping algebra, and conversely over here. So we saw that last week, and the isomorphism is just generated by the following assignment. 1 goes to 1 plus tensor 1 minus, and then you extend as a UG module map to this. So that's point one. Point two, we've got this functor F, which is the forgetful functor going from the category M, and I'll remind you what that is, to the category of vector spaces. So where M is the category of representations of UG with certain morphisms. And so the assignment here sends any module M, so viewed as a module over UG, to the underlying vector space of M, in other words, viewed as a module over the ground field K. And we saw how the forgetful functor is what they call representable, in the sense that the functor is isomorphic to a set of Hons, namely Hom G Hons from U of G into M. And the way, so the upshot of all of this is, so we view basically the functor F can be thought of as a collection of vector spaces, and namely for each, so essentially indexed by the modules of G, and for each module the vector space is just the underlying vector space for that module. And the assignment, so a particular vector space is simply viewed as the collection of all elements to which one can be sent. So the assignment is, so the assignment going the other direction, given F in the G Hons, you send F to F of 1, which is sitting inside M. So in other words, we identify this is really, well, no, it's in M. So we view the underlying vector space of M as all the images that one can take under module maps. So that's point two. And then point three, just to tie these two things together here, we would view in general, if M is any module, we view M as being the GHOMs of M plus tensor M minus into M. So what we said was that it's the GHOMs from UG into M, but we've also shown that we have this isomorphism of UG with M plus tensor M minus. So when we need to work with the forgetful functor, we will actually phrase things this way. So fourth point is we put a certain braided monoidal category structure on M. So let me remind you about that. Given a Drinfeld associator, phi, and putting R equals E to the H T 1 2 over 2. So this is an element of the third tensor power of G, or a power series in that, and this is in the second power tensor power of G. We get a braiding. Sigma R, which satisfies the Reitemeister 2 and 3 moves. But, so this reminder is expanding, but one thing that I want to know here with regard to this tensor structure, or this braided monoidal structure, is that the way, and this was a few times ago, the way we defined the tensor product of two modules was just that, so if M and N...
So, sorry for slowing you. You mean, it's not that sigma R satisfies R2 and R3, it satisfies the pentagon and the hexagon along with phi. I mean...
Yeah. Well, okay, fair enough. Yeah. But the crossings... Well... So are you saying that this is false? What don't you like here?
Sigma R.
This is a consequence, like the technical.
It does not satisfy R3, for example. It does not satisfy the naive R3, but only the R3. Relative to the quasi, how should I say that? To the deformed tensor structure that you have on.
Yeah.
Or.
Okay.
No, that's all. I mean, it's not. Sorry, we're. Do you agree, or are we? I mean,
No, this is shorthand. I will agree.
So, like, the R3 that it satisfies is not naive. It's R3 with lots of associators thrown in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So thanks for clarifying. And but the monoidal structure that we put on this, and I didn't spend much time on it, but I just said that M tensor N is the usual tensor product. But what that means is, so if we have G in the Lie algebra G, then and we're wondering how it acts on M tensor N, where these are elements of the respective things. G, so the usual tensor product means that G acts as a derivation, as a Lie algebra usually does. In other words, delta G is G tensor 1 plus 1 tensor G. And in particular, UG already has a coproduct, which is this, and this coproduct is exactly co-associative. Exactly co-associative. But when we were talking about the braided monoidal structure, we needed this Drinfeld associator. Or really co-associator in a sense. So why did we need that? And the reason is that if we use the usual co-product on UG with its exact co-associativity, so in other words, with phi equals to 1, the hexagons will no longer be satisfied with this R because of the fact that R is an exponential involving these variables, Tij, which are not commutative. So with the usual coproduct and phi equals 1, we do not get a braided monoidal category structure because hexes are not satisfied. Which is just saying that T, the exponential of T12 plus T13 is not equal to e to the T12 times e to the T13. That's essentially what, if you strip out the phis, which we're saying are 1, then the hexagon would be saying this, and this is false with non-commutative variables. So the braided monoidal category structure here is not the one that comes sort of naively from this coproduct. We really need these phis. But what we will see today and the next time is that the result of having this braided monoidal structure effectively implies on UG a different coproduct. And so we'll be making that explicit today and maybe next time. So we will see that the braided monoidal structure on M implies a new coproduct on UG. Okay, and so this is where we go back to that whole Tanaka crying business, and we saw before how there's a number of steps we need to go through to get this co-product structure, and we need to start out with, so we use the forgetful functor and a tensor structure on it. So let me remind you about tensor structures. So I don't have that written down here. So recall that a tensor structure on a functor F, so here F is no longer forgetful, it's just any functor from a graded monoidal category C to a graded monoidal category D. So the tensor structure, well, I've only written it down for monoidal categories, but is a family of natural isomorphisms, J, X, Y, for each X, Y in C, which maps F of X tensor F of Y to, so this is J, X, Y, maps isomorphically to F of X tensor Y. And there's some compatibility requirements. So satisfying two compatibility requirements which relate to associativity. So if you have three elements x, y, z of C, then j, x, y, j, x, tensor, y, comma, z, has to be equal to j, y, z, j, x, comma, y, tensor, z. So we saw how this is really, we saw how this coherence requirement could come up a few times ago, and even last time. And then the other coherence requirement is that J, X, 1 should be equal to J, 1, X should be equal to the identity, where by 1, I mean the unit in the graded monoidal structure. So in other words, the trivial, in our example here, it would be the trivial representation. But whatever the unit is for the braided, for the monoidal structure, J and for, of X1, where X is any other element of C, should be equal to J1X, should be equal to the identity. And then if you layer on a grading, then there is an extra requirement relating to the grading. So with all those reminders, let me plunge into, well, actually, we will be really continuing with a bit more reminder. So,
should I take pictures or not?
We should take, well, do we need pictures or might as well take a picture, even though it's reminder.
So, just one minute. I think the only reasonable way to do it is to take four pictures. Because you're going backwards, right?
So the first order of the day here is to define a tensor structure on the forgetful functor, which I've just erased. So I had started doing that last time. In the paper, this is section 2.4, so tensor structure on the forgetful functor, where again, F of blank is viewed as the Hams from M plus tensor M minus into blank. So let V be an element of F of V. So this is the underlying vector space of some module big V. And W be a vector in the underlying vector space of big W. I need to tell you, I'm going to define a map JVW from F of V tensor F of W into F of V tensor W. So given V and W, I need to tell you what that goes to. And again, I'm viewing V as being a map from U of G into this module V, and more specifically, I'm identifying V with the image of 1. So I can sort of view V as being V of 1. So this is the identity element of UG. And I'm essentially, so again, I'm viewing the vector as being the vector to which 1 of UG gets sent. And similarly for W, and for V tensor W, I'm going to view it also as an element of this. So in other words, in order to tell you what J, so this would be JVW, in order to tell you what JVW a V tensor W is, I need to tell you what element of V tensor W the 1 of UG gets sent to. So I'm identifying this thing by the element, the vector to which 1 gets sent to in here. So what will that be? Actually, the better notation is the following. So JVW of V tensor W is going to be a map which will send 1 to some element of to some element JVW V tensor W of 1 in F of V tensor W. And for 1, so what is that element? Well, it is the name, the element which sends 1 plus tensor 1 minus. So again, I'm viewing UG as being M plus tensor M minus. And this is the generator of M plus tensor M minus. And I need to tell you what this element is going to get sent to by JVW of V tensor W. And the way that works is a series of steps. So the first step is I apply I plus tensor I minus. These are the so-called co-products on M plus and M minus respectively, which we saw was associative, co-associative, and quasi-co-associative last week, or before. So this it now gets sent into, there's an abuse of notation here in that this is an element, and here I've got spaces, but, so maybe I should write M plus tensor M minus, which contains 1 plus tensor 1 minus. But you apply 1 plus tensor 1 I minus, so you get sent into M plus tensor M minus, but these are associated this way. Okay. And then the next step is you reassociate these, and we want to end up with the m plus and the m minus side by side, and we will flip them. So there's two associativities. First, we need to move the brackets to here. So it goes as follows. So this is, I'll write loosely phi, but it's some associativity. M plus tensor M minus, sorry, M plus tensor M minus tensor M minus. And then a further associativity to reassociate in here, so the M plus and M minus are together. So we go to M plus tensor M plus tensor M minus, and then we now apply the braiding in here, so we'll flip these two terms. So the next map is 1 beta 1, where by beta I mean the braiding. So there's tensors here. So we get sent to M plus tensor M minus tensor M plus tensor M minus. And then we deassociate again, so that we will end up with M plus M minus on the left and M plus M minus on the right. So that's two steps again. So the first step takes us to M plus tensor M minus tensor M plus tensor M minus. And sorry, again, it's loosely some associativity. And finally, we get to M plus tensor M minus tensor M plus tensor M minus. And then on here, so in each component, we now have M plus tensor M minus, which we saw is isomorphic to UG. So I can now apply little v to this and get an element of big V, and apply little w to this and get an element of big W. So the final step is to apply the map little v tensor little w, and this takes us into big V tensor big W. Okay? Is that, it's a bit of a mouthful. But that's the map. This is the tensor structure. I claim in particular that it is an isomorphism between these two things, and it satisfies the compatibility or the coherence requirements, namely this, these requirements here. So I need to show firstly that it's an isomorphism, and then we will look at this requirement here. So firstly, the isomorphism, right, okay, so for purposes of proving the fact that it is a tensor structure, we will take advantage of a certain simplification, namely, So the category curly M is a braided adenoidal structure, and in particular, it has a non-trivial co-associativity. But there's some fancy theorem that says that any what's called non-strict monoidal category, namely that it has a non-trivial co-associativity, any such category is equivalent to one with a trivial co-associativity, what's called a strict monoidal category. And so we will take advantage of that, and we will prove this in the associated strict monoidal category for M, for curly M. So that will, if we prove that in the related strict monoidal category, this is an isomorphism which satisfies coherence, the same will carry back to the original category. We will lose information about the specifics of the maps. So later on, when we write down specifics of the map, we will have lost some information, which we can later recover. But it simplifies things for purposes of some proofs. Yes, Jorah?
Isn't this an isomorphism for reasons along the following lines, that if you mod out by H, it is an isomorphism. Everything becomes somehow the identity, and therefore it's an isomorphism. And then you can somehow argue that if it's an isomorphism mod H, then it's an isomorphism.
Yes.
Is this what you're going to do, or are you going to to say something else?
Well, it does come to that. I will say what you said, but slightly more specifically, in that essentially what you said.
Okay.
Yeah. So, So, in other words, for purposes of proving, for example, the isomorphism, we will treat the phis as being one. So, this first map will be one. That will only come later. But let me sort of summarize what JVW of V tensor W is. So JVW sends 1 plus tensor 1 minus. So we first applied that I plus tensor I minus, and we got, so we get 1 plus tensor 1 plus tensor 1 minus tensor 1 minus. And then we applied a composition of 2 associativities, and we get to 1 plus tensor 1 minus tensor 1 plus tensor 1 minus. Then we applied the...
So now you're looking at the associativities as if they were 1.
Yeah.
I mean, this is modulo H, what you wrote.
I will be doing that. In other words, I will be saying the associativities are one, but not just yet. For now, I'm remembering that the association.
So then what you wrote is false. I mean, associativities don't take 1 plus tensor 1 plus, you know.
This is the module.
So this is the same as the formula, so then it's M, not 1, and it's the formula you already wrote.
Well, okay, so what I want to write is this. I want to give a sort of shortened form of, 1 plus tensor. This equals small v tensor small w. Circle some associativity, circle one data one circle some other associativity, circle I plus tensor I minus, all applied to 1 plus tensor 1 minus. Okay? And
yes.
I wanted to just pare all that down to this information. And now define small j vw of the parameter h to be, so this associativity, circle 1 beta 1, circle that associativity, and so again, remember that phi is a power series in the third tensor power of UG, and beta is a power series in the second tensor power. But it's just a power series of tensors. And phi and beta are invertible. So going back to George's point, they begin with, the power series begins with 1 in each case. It doesn't follow necessarily that it could follow the 2. But in fact, each power series begins with 1 plus higher order terms. So, when I say JVW of H, it's acknowledging the fact that this composition of morphisms just corresponds to the product of the corresponding underlying power series for the associativities, the braiding, and these associativities. So this is just a big power series in powers of H with coefficients in various tensor powers of UG. And because each of these power series begins with 1, the resulting power series also begins with 1. So it will be 1 plus h.
Sorry, I think of it as inside UG to the 4th? Or
yes. So this is a, you know, 1 with 4 strands plus h times and maybe completed or something, I don't know. So it is actually sitting on 4 strands, or has 4 copies of UG. Great. So this thing is invertible. And then the point is that V tensor W gets sent by J of VW. Well, to V tensor W of small j of VW of H applied to 1 plus tensor 1 minus tensor 1 plus tensor 1 minus. And so this power series J of VW, so this makes this map J of VW a lot more concrete, I think, because what it means is there's this power series, which in principle can be written down, or at least as many terms as you want can be written down, and it's applied to this vector, and G of VW is just this composition. But then the fact that J is invertible comes from the fact that this thing here is an invertible map. And in particular, up to, if you mod out by H, as Dwar said, it's the identity. And then plus higher orders of powers of H. So that's why this thing is an isomorphism. Does that make sense? So that was to prove the isomorphism that but now we need to check the coherence. And it's here that I will treat the associativities as if they were the identity, not there. So actually, if we could take pictures, and I'm going to resume over there, because I'll just leave. Maybe I can, no, I'll relay it for present purposes. So now I'll prove coherence. So coherence. And this will actually be done pictorially. So, pictorially. And the pictures will be generated by the following. So for I plus or I minus the coproducts, we write these pictures. So there's a trivalent vertex here, in other words. And last week we saw that the I plus and I minus are co-associative. We saw exactly and quasi co-associative, but we're neglecting all the phis here. So in other words, we have a relation. So co-associativity is the fact that this is equal to this, and since these two are the same, we can allow ourselves to rewrite either or both as being, corresponding to a quadrivalent vertex. So this stands for either of those since they are the same. And this circles back, I think, to something George said in his lecture a week or two ago, which has to do with sweeping on trivalent graphs, where something similar is happening here. And that, we'll see this in better detail later, but if you think of each of these as being a little bit thickened, then what he did last time was he showed how you can pull all of these vertices back so that you just end up with one big vertex like this. And what we're going to see today is very similar to that. So that's, anyway,
So then it's a sequence of pictures again.
Yeah.
Just a minute.
And our proof of the coherence is really going to be just an instance of Dror's sort of sweeping statement from a few weeks ago. So, now, using that language, J of VW is the following picture. J of VW corresponds to the picture M plus. Do I still have it on the board? So you start out with the coproducts on the M plus and the M minus, And then you have, we're putting the associativities to one, but so you have the I plus and the I minus, and then you have a flip of the inner core, of the inner strands. So M plus M minus, here we apply I plus and I minus. I'll just break them on the side. And then, so now we have the 1 beta 1. So we have four strands here. And the 1 beta 1 means that we cross this over that strand. And then, we are applying little v to this and little w to this. This is j of vw of little v tensor little w. And so at the bottom here we have the space big V and big W. And then the coherence law can be stated pictorially. So the coherence law is J in symbols is J of U tensor V comma W circle J of U comma W, U comma V, is equal to J of U comma V tensor W circle J UV, W, UV, V, comma W. So, first you flip, well, we'll do it pictorially, but essentially first you flip the VW, and then you pass those over the U, or the other way around. So, in pictures, M plus M minus, first, we have this, and we flip these guys. So that's this piece here. And then, so now we have, oops. Yeah. So now we divide this guy and this guy and flip this over like so. And apply U, apply V, and apply W. So the result belonging to U tensor V tensor W. And on the other hand, we end up with M plus M minus. So now, so again, we divide each piece. Flip. And now it's on this side that we apply, that we do division. So here we have U, V, W, going to U, big V, big W. And we want to see that these pictures are the same. So here the next correspondence with Dürer's trivalent graph story comes in, because so we've got these trivalent graphs here, effectively, and they're slightly knotted in the sense that we've got some crossings. And for purposes of our proof, we'll actually be pulling this crossing, vertex through the crossing. And so that's where we have a version of the so-called vertex invariance. Okay, so important little note. So I claim that this picture is equal to this picture. Okay, so that's a kind of vertex invariance. And this is from the functoriality of functoriality or naturalness of beta. Namely, one tensor I plus beta. I guess I'm going. I guess it's really the other way around. So when let me just write what I have written down, and so I plus tensor one circle beta 1, 2, comma 3. No, that's the other one. So this one here is 1. If we go up, I guess we should be going down. So on this side we have 1 I plus tensor 1 circle beta. So this is correct on this side. On this side, we have beta followed by 1 tensor. So that does that seem correct? So again, the orientation is downwards. So this corresponds to the picture, but this is what functoriality of beta means. So that proves the picture. And so as a result of that, we can pull this vertex, for example, past the crossing, and do the same on the other side. With the result that we end up with side, just squeezing it in. So now I've pulled all the vertices up to the top, and all the crossings then happen below the vertices. But then what we have at the top is just a version of co-associativity. So this here corresponds to one of these triple things, and this here also corresponds to a triple vertex. And the same thing, we have the same thing here. And so the top portions of the diagrams will just be two copies of these on both sides, and so they will be equal. So that's the top portion of the drawings. And then the bottom portion of the drawings are equal so the top is co-associativity, and then the bottoms are equal by the triangle relation.
I think on the right, the one part from the top fell into the bottom.
Yeah. This guy?
Yes.
So I need a bit more space, so I'll continue maybe here. So the bottom right plane is, if I put the following indices, so 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then I claim on the left, I have one delta here, seems to be working backwards on my thing here. So on the left I have one delta. Theta 1, 2, 3, followed by beta 2, 4. And on the right, I have so first this crossing, so this is beta, so this is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. 2, 3, 4 with the comma here. And I guess it's a bit redundant, but one delta. Followed by beta 1, and then this is the third strand here, so beta 1, comma 3. And the way, so that's the relation. We build it using the triangle, which, in other words, the hexagons subject to phi being the identity. So, in other words, what we will do is we will unpack this this one delta here. Using the triangle relation. So on the left, for example, we have this followed by this crossing. And we identify that with, so we can unpack this delta crossing so that it becomes Thank you. what becomes this. So this double crossing, I've just split into two separate crossings using the triangle. And if you look at the right-hand side, it's the same thing as well. So on the right-hand side, you would split that out into two crossings, and you would get a picture which is the same thing up to the Rademeister dream roof. And so the equality follows from that. So the right-hand side, do you want me to draw that, or? Like the right-hand side, we would get So actually, this is not even Rademeister 3. This is just locality in space. So the fact that you can shift these two, so it ends up being just the hexagon in order to unpack this double crossing, followed by locality in space. So I'm using the triangle, which is to say the hexagon, plus locality in space.
So let me take pictures, mm-hmm. and then sort of tell us what you plan to do next, and maybe we should sort of not continue, but rather have some discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You got saved to this time.
So, but just to follow up on the remark made earlier, just like with drawers not in trivialing crafts, the way this works is you pull. Or you can pull all the vertices up so that they're out of the action, and they're just all gathered into big vertices. And then all of the real action takes below where the crossings are. And once you've done that, essentially at that point, the vertex invariance property, it ceases to be relevant. Once you've swept all the vertices right up at the top, then obviously vertex invariance ceases to be relevant for what appears below. Yeah, so let's have a discussion.
So what's next on your agenda?
What's next on my agenda is session 2.5 of this paper.
Oh, are you done with what you were planning to do today? I mean,
so that's done for today.
Okay.
I guess what happens, excuse me, next in the paper. So I guess one thing is that one could make more explicit this map little j of VW, which is a power series in H. One could make that a little more explicit, although really it's just a matter of putting precise indices on the composition that we've already written down. So to my mind, it's not hugely important, at least right now. To follow the order of the paper, what we would end up doing next time is we need some more definitions and some new concepts. In other words, we need to define the notion of what it means what a quantization is. So there's a bunch of new notions that we need to introduce. And then we'll see, once we have those new notions, that we are very close to, we've actually gone a long way. But I think we'll have to start up next time with a bunch of definitions and such.
Okay. So my side is that I'm already in pain.
Yeah.
Because, this is clearly a mixture of knot theory and algebra, and I'd like to purify it, meaning purify, not purify, sorry, just to make the distinction with Saturday, anyway, and I'm already lost here. I mean, I'm already confused about how to purify this. And the reason I'm in pain is because that would have been the right time to take for me to sit down for a long time and try to do it before our next meeting, when everything is fresh in my mind, but it's not going to happen. So I don't know what to say.
Has that work been at all done? Like, if we read Habib's paper, is it in there to any degree? Or?
To some degree, it is. So it's been turned diagrammatic.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been. But that diagrammatics has not been shown to be the diagrammatics of the associated graded of anything. So it's only to a little extent done. So essentially all that Ami Chaviv does is he takes these pictures, and everywhere you see a U of G, he replaces it by calligraphic A arrow, okay? And everywhere you see, PBW on U of G, it becomes diagrammatic PBW. Everywhere you see co-product, it becomes strand doubling, but it remains at A arrow level. It wasn't lifted to K level.
To K.
Knots.
Knots.
Okay. So, it doesn't seem out of reach. It sounds completely reachable, but still it hasn't been done. So so that makes it even more painful. As an example. Okay, so let's make it even longer. Okay, so U of G is isomorphic to M plus tensor M minus. Becomes, in diagrammatic terms, that A of a single strand, or to be precise, A arrow of a single strand, because G is a bialgebra, is isomorphic to A of what I would call a two-strand thing, but one of the strands has a plus at the top and the other has a minus at the top. I think we talked about it at some point, okay? But what this means is that a strand with a plus at the top, when it gets an incoming arrow, when there is an incoming arrow right next to it, is equal to, I don't remember if this is the one that's equal to zero, or if it's the other way around, but anyway, a strand with a plus at the top with an incoming arrow is equal to zero, and a strand with a minus at the top with an outgoing arrow is equal to zero.
The point being that those are the last
The last one, the top one.
And that corresponds to the fact that with the M plus, for example, if you multiply it by the element of UG that's in with a G plus element on the right, that's zero.
Yeah. So that ought to correspond to a fact about virtual knots, which would be that the virtual knotting of a single line is isomorphic to the virtual knots or the virtual knotting of two lines, okay, where one is marked at, with a plus at the top at one end and the other with a minus, and and then you have sort of two further itemized moves. So if you have an overcrossing right above the plus, you can get rid of it. Okay, so kind of the ends, so in a long knot, the ends are, you cannot pass over the end. Okay, so here it's not quite a long knot, it's a knot with a dot at the end, and you cannot pass the dot. But if it's an overcrossing near a plus dot, you can sort of, you can slide over it. And likewise, if it's an undercrossing near a minus dot, then again you can slide it off. Okay? So here are two non-theoretic relations that seem to imitate these diagrammatic relations. Okay? And then conjecture, this is an isomorphism. Okay? Where the isomorphism is, okay, I mean, these two are isomorphic, and the isomorphism is, you just, well, you apply the co-product, right? The isomorphism, this goes to that, is by applying the co-product. Okay? So the isomorphism here should be the cabling. Okay? So it should be one line becomes two parallel lines, one with a plus, one with a minus. So whatever, however, whichever way this line was virtually knotted, these two will be virtually knotted the same way, and you'd have except for one of these lines, you're able to sort of trivialize one type of crossings at the end. And for the other line, you're able to trivialize the other type of crossings, again, at the end.
Okay. So what does this mean when you pulled it off? I don't understand that. Does that mean it becomes virtual?
Virtual, yeah. It becomes nothing. So I mean, sort of pull it off just means nothingize it. Okay? So, that shouldn't be a hard statement. Okay? It should be... Again, I'd expect it to be an easy statement.
Well, there's a PBW buried in there, though.
You're right, there is a PBW... No. Yes, you're right, there is a PBW buried in it in the... Oh, so yes, so maybe you're right, so maybe it's not so easy. Okay? So in fact, maybe it's not even true as a statement of virtual knots, but it is true as a statement about virtual knots modulo n equivalence. Okay, so modulo kn for any n. Okay?
You mean in the associated gradient?
Well, in the... well, not quite the associated gradient. In the... quotient by kn for any n.
Oh,
okay, the associated graded is kn mod kn mod kn plus 1.
Yeah.
And here I'm making a statement, or you know, maybe modulo kn plus 1, okay? So I mean, I'm making a statement about virtual knots, not singular virtual knots. Only that I'm modding them out by high order singularities. Okay, so something of that nature ought to be true, and it may or may not be easy to prove. Well, I haven't tried, I don't know. Or maybe I've tried not enough and long ago when I didn't get full, when I understood the notions less well. Okay? And that would be sort of a tiny part of the big picture that you've been drawing. Okay, I don't know, I'm just making a comment, so. And again, under good conditions, I'd sit down and think about it. But it's not going to happen. At least not right now. Okay? Maybe we should quit and meet again next week.